¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening. And enjoy the show.
Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast, bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Good evening, listeners. I'm Eric Peabody, and you've managed to find your way back to Horror Hill. Tonight, we'll be reading two stories, exploring both inner and outer space. We'll open with Member Barry and Murder by N.M. Brown. In this tale, our unnamed narrator has recently relocated to one of the dwindling number of U.S. states where marijuana is still illegal, and, sensing a prime business opportunity, decides to fill an economic niche by becoming a dealer. Things are going pretty well for our protagonist, until a strange delivery request finds him out in the sticks. His GPS is no longer working, and he's now at a strange house with a very strange woman. Oh, and one more thing. She has a freshly dead body that she needs help disposing of. After that, we'll close out with Blanketed in the Stars by Ryan Major. Our unnamed protagonist, seriously though, sometimes none of these people have names, is trying to take care of his father following a stroke. His father, who has grieved for years over the loss of his wife on a NASA mission, can only say one phrase: "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars." His behavior starts getting stranger and stranger, and our narrator starts feeling like he's going crazy. But the reality of the situation is far more bizarre and dangerous than he can imagine. You're listening to the standard edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, and we can scale back some of our Less savory means of generating money for the show. By the way, you wouldn't happen to still have all of your organs, would you? And now, from author N.M. Brown, I give you Member Berry and Murder. I'd never been this close to a freshly dead body before, and I moved here from Florida, for fuck's sake. I should have known. Everything was too nice. Things were too perfect. I guess it would be helpful if I backtracked a bit and explained. I need to do something to occupy my mind, and this is as good an outlet as any. I'll probably be too verbose, and I might go off topic a few too many times. But unfortunately, you'll have to bear with me on this. You'd be a little weird, too, if you just experienced what I did. So, as most of you already know, the medicinal and recreational use of marijuana is legalized and available in most of the 50 states that make up the U.S. The state I happened to move to was not one of them. My medical card was all but useless here. It's not all bad, though. I was able to snag a beautiful house in a quiet neighborhood for an amazing price, and compared to where I came from, that was a welcomed change. People wave at each other here, and it's not weird. The food seems fresher, and the air is cleaner. Sure, the no legal pot thing sucked, but everything has a trade-off. It was just what I needed, a town to start over in, a chance to grow and have a shot at being the version of myself that I've always wanted to be. However, I needed employment to do that. Sadly, in a town like mine, there are only so many places to work, and call me spoiled if you want to, but not many of them were appealing. I'd never lived in such a quaint place before. It was small, like everything is closed on Sundays except for small churches. Like, the police department is two towns over because there's nothing to do here. Small. Things seemed to be a decade or more behind the rest of the world. It reminded me of simpler times, when people were decent to each other just because. The universal fingers of hate and evil hadn't yet seemed to reach here. Now, I'm not getting soapboxy. You guys know what I mean. You see it online every day. It's like a virus of the soul that no one wants to recognize, let alone find a cure for. Except, I did. Oh, I recognized it all right. It's even gotten a hold of me a time or two more than I'd like to admit. It was when I began searching through strangers' photographs on their pages, desperately hoping to find something to report, that I knew I was fucked up in the worst way. Priorities and lifestyles would have to be assessed, evaluated, and changed. Anyway, back to the heart of the matter, marijuana. I know this likely seems a step backward, especially given my previous sentence, but in the spirit of community, I decided to try my hand at finding my own source and selling it to anyone interested. A little supply and demand situation, if you will. Buying in bulk was easy here. You could get one quarter for $100, and it was only 200 for an ounce. That's like, buy two, get two free. It seemed a little backwards, but I don't make the rules, pal. Luckily for me, weed's been around pretty much forever, so it didn't matter how far back in time I seemed to be in association. One more stroke of luck was that a bill was passed the month I moved here, deeming both medicinal and recreational use, growth, and distribution possible. But that doesn't make sense, does it? Why would I consider something that would make what I had to offer becoming readily available to the public a good thing? Because the actual effects of the law, plus the stores to sell it, were still months to years away, even after the legalization process was complete. This makes consumers feel more comfortable buying and drives up the demand. Having something be entirely visible but still out of reach? A toy you can see but not play with? The dress in the window that would look great on you but isn't in your closet? Stuff like that. So, yeah, you bet I was excited. It was prime pickings, and I had money to make. Also, let's get one thing out of the way right now. I'm more of an herbalist than a drug dealer, and more accidents have occurred from alcohol than from weed. So I'd appreciate you leaving the judgy stuff out of the comments, okay? Just be cool, will ya? That's exactly what brought me into her neck of the woods. I'd gotten a message from someone I didn't recognize. It may seem ominous, but it was something all too common in my line of work. Now, I wasn't exactly busy. However, I was in the middle of a lazy TV binge day. I didn't necessarily have to answer the call, so to speak. I considered ignoring it entirely, actually. She'd still want some the next day, and as ungrateful as it sounds, I wasn't exactly hurting financially at the moment. But she wanted 2 ounces, and who the fuck was I to turn down that kind of money, even on a good day? What happened next sealed the deal, even if it did make me extremely uncomfortable. My phone lit up with yet another unexpected message. She'd found me on social media and sent me the money in advance, something I never recommend, by the way. Let's call it red flag number 1. Cash is king. Let's say you get 7 people to put in orders and pay you online. Once you make over $600, the IRS will get into your business. And I didn't exactly know how to fill out a 1099 for weed sales. Nevertheless, I gave her the benefit of the doubt because I still hadn't fully figured out the vibe in this place. Other than that, everyone was really polite. She sent me to an address in an area just outside of town that I hadn't been to before. I psyched myself into believing it would be a great opportunity for me to absorb and familiarize myself with more of the new surroundings and hit the road. I was excited to get back home and back into my groove before I even left the driveway. But business is business, though, and the sooner it was done, the sooner I could return to the comfort of my Chase lounge and do just that. If only it were that easy. First, my GPS completely lost signal 3/4 of the way to her location. Then, when I finally did get there, the house I pulled up at looked completely empty. I waited in the idling vehicle for 10 minutes, unsure of what to do. I got out of my car, noticing that the yard didn't have much to offer for concealment to just drop it off. I have one guy who always has me leave it in a garden gnome's backpack. I open the tiny cloth flap, retrieve the cash, and leave the bag. He doesn't know what I look like, and I wouldn't know him if he sideswiped me on the way to the grocery store. I wish they could all be like that, I thought wistfully. I was about to leave, at least to go somewhere that had a signal to message her and see what the deal was, when I saw the front door crack open. A burst of bright red hair popped through the opening, framing a face that seemed too small to fit the cascading waves it attached to. A pale hand appeared under her chin, beckoning me to come inside. Then she disappeared back behind the door in a fluid motion. Okay. Firstly, what the fuck? Why couldn't she just come outside like a normal person? It's not like she lived in a tight-knit neighborhood where I had to act like I was visiting a friend for appearances. She was the only house around for miles. I sat there in silence as I contemplated all the things that could possibly go wrong if I went inside. There's the fact that even if I didn't touch anything, I'd still be thought of for the next few days every time something went missing in the house. Misplaced her hairbrush? Ew, that creepy weed guy must have taken it. Funny smell? Must have been the weed guy. Can't find the cat? The fucking weed guy must have let her outside when he was here. Do you follow? And those are some of the more innocent scenarios. Paranoid? Hell, maybe. But the last long-term relationship I had, key word, had, was with a woman named Bethany. And as beautiful as she was, all she ever wanted to do, besides boink, smoke, and eat, was watch true crime videos on YouTube. Try as I might to tune them out, some of that shit slipped in. People have been accused for less, and if you don't have the money for a lawyer, Sometimes it doesn't even matter if you did it or not. Once you're pinned, and that's that. I decided that a compromise was in order and stopped at the top of the porch stairs. The sooner I got this over with, the sooner I could go back to binge-watching with my bong. However, by that point, a feeling of unease bred with fear had seeped into my brain and body. I noticed my motions were slower, muted in a way. "Hey!" I shouted politely. I tried to make it sound pleasant anyway. "I'm here." No response came, even after several awkward moments. Then the door opened again. A feminine voice drifted through the air. Now, don't make fun of me, all right? I know I don't sound like a woman, but I'll do my best to indicate when she spoke without mocking the feminine tone here. She said to me, "Come on in. My hands are kind of tied up right now." I kept my mind on the prize as I stepped through the door, closing it behind me. Clear conscience, chaise lounge, leftovers in the fridge, the good doctor, and a half ounce of memberberry.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
I didn't waste time looking around inside. That would end up with me spending more time there than necessary. All I needed was to hand it over and bounce. Maybe I should have, though. I could have thrown it on a table nearby, yelled out where it was, and been on my way. But we all know that's not what happened. What's a horror story without a woulda, coulda, shoulda scenario anyway? Muffled sounds came from a side room, so I figured she must be there. "Yo, I appreciate the business and all, but I'm kind of in a hurry." It came out like a question more than a statement. The doorway to the room was within arm's reach. "Let's get this over with," I thought, pasting a smile on my face. What I saw made me freeze mid-step. The smile melted off my face like someone had thrown acid on my lips. Terrifying anxiety had robbed me of my ability to speak, blink, maybe even breathe. There she was, indeed, with 2 hands full of body. She shot me a desperate look as she struggled to drag him toward me. I knew right away he was dead. There wasn't any blood, and he didn't have any visible wounds, but his coloring was all wrong. He looked gray, like when they took E.T. to the hospital and he almost died. Remember how sickly pale the alien was? His eyes were closed, thank God. However, it was more than obvious that the dead weight of this once-living soul was too much for the smaller woman to handle. She began speaking a million miles a minute, I'm sure trying to explain what had happened or justify the situation in her favor in some way. Truth be told, I didn't hear most of it. The more information I knew, the more complicit I became, anyway. Politeness be damned. I was out. "Okay there. First, let me preface this by saying I didn't see anything here, and whatever you got going on is none of my business. I'll stop by the fridge on my way out the door. I'm gonna leave now." I spoke slowly and enunciated my words with great care. She thrust a wad of cash into my right hand as she grabbed the left to stop me from leaving. The corpse was completely abandoned on the floor by now. She already paid me, I thought. What was this? A help me hide the body bonus? As much noise as was in my head, her next words rang through loud and clear. "What are you going to do? Call the cops? There's just as much evidence here to indicate that it was your fault as it may have been mine. People have confessed to murders who weren't even at the crime scene. What makes you more innocent than me, circumstantially?" And there we have it, folks. One of the worst-case scenarios, and exactly why I didn't want to come inside. All I wanted was to make some extra money to pay my gas and power bills comfortably. Now, here I was, accessory to the murder of a guy I didn't even know. She was right. You all know she was right. Once you're pinned, you're pinned. Thanks, Bethany. So this is how we got here. Me with a pocket full of bagged weed and hands full of a dead man's armpits. I did my best to make as many mental notes as I could. I looked for ligature marks, or tried to, at least. There were no puncture wounds on his arms that I could see. It almost looked like he was sleeping, like some lady asked me to help drag her dead husband to bed after one hell of a bender. My first priority was to remain calm. If I acted like this was no big deal, maybe she would too. Maybe I could walk out of here and never have to think about this again. Stranger things have happened, right? We escorted him to a patch of earth by the edge of the woods behind her house. It looked like she'd tried, and failed, to create a makeshift grave. Far be it from me to criticize anyone in her situation, but truthfully, the damn hole was barely big enough to bury a dog in. Finally, my back couldn't take it anymore, and I dropped him in the dirt, his head making a soft thunking sound upon impact that made me wince. My unintentional partner in a crime that was not mine looked at me, then at a shovel on the ground, and then back at me again. "No," I muttered. "Nope, I helped you drag him, and that's way more involved than I wanted to be in the first place. I don't care about what happened, and I don't care how he died. All I care about is getting back home safely to spend the rest of my day in peace." She held up her hand, and her wrist showed noticeable swelling. She complained that I caused her to injure herself when I dropped him when she wasn't prepared for it. The balls on this woman! Still, it's not my problem. She could leave him out for the bears and raccoons to eat for all I cared. Do raccoons eat people? Will they? I mean, is the meat rotting and smelling really bad? They like garbage, and that smells really bad. Focus. At that moment, a splintered wooden pole was shoved into my hand, and a shovel head was attached at the end. I know the handle was splintered because it cut my damn hand. I did my best to try to block out Bethany's voice in my head, warning me about DNA evidence and blood spatter analysis as I dug the pit to a more appropriate size. I hated every second of it, cringing as tiny flecks of dirt wedged beneath my fingernails. The soil was tough here, full of little pebbles and root heavy. She couldn't have picked a worse spot if she tried. Once I was finished, I used energy I didn't even know I had left to clamber out of the hole. A slow, satisfied smile bloomed across her lips like a poisoned flower in the spring. I'd done well enough of a job distracting myself, until this point. I didn't mind digging the hole much. Digging in the dirt isn't illegal. It's this next part I had a problem with. Committing somebody to a dirt and gravel-filled grave was another animal altogether. A muted groan of disgust drifted from my lungs as she began pushing him towards the hole with her foot. Yeah, I didn't expect us to lay him down on rose petals with a silk pillow, but kicking him just seemed to add insult to injury. Maybe it was self-defense. Maybe this guy was a stone-cold criminal with utter disregard for human life itself. I might have known if I had listened to her hysterical speech earlier, but as I said before, the less I knew, the better. I began lifting him up to place him in a more dignified way, when she grabbed my shoulder to stop me. "Face down! We need to put him face down!" she pleaded. My stomach filled with something akin to cold frying oil, and I knew I had to puke. I didn't know if it was the physical exertion, leftover adrenaline, or just the situation as a whole catching up to me, but I managed to keep it down. "Breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth," I mentally chanted until it passed completely. A sharp pain in the palm of my hand brought me out of my intestinal mind's eye and back to reality. The fucking splinter. Enough of it was visible to where it seemed to be able to be removed by hand. What I did next was stupid. I knew it then, and I know it now. I eased the splinter up and out of my palm before throwing the scrap of wood into the open grave. Regret filled me the moment it left my fingertips, but not enough to send me into the hole after it. An epiphany hit me like a heavyweight fighter, starting at the tips of my hair and traveling to my toes. I didn't have to be here. I'd done more than help. I'd exonerated her from any improper disposal of a deceased human body charges, or whatever they were called. I reached into my pocket, pulled out the bag, and handed it to her, determined to make my arm appear as still as possible. She looked at me bewildered and shook her head. "Hey, you called me out here for this. 2 ounces, just like you wanted. Take it." I might add that she gently pushed my arm back towards me without taking the bag. Then she turned away, attempting to fill the hole back up with dirt. The walk back to my car was pretty agonizing. I felt like I was being hunted, like prey, with every step I took. My whole body shook in anticipation of hearing a gunshot or some other implement of my own destruction, but none ever came. Before I knew it, I was back on the road, putting as much distance between myself and one of the creepiest events of my life as possible. If I wanted to have experiences like this, I would have stayed in fucking Florida. My hands had stopped shaking for the most part by the time I got back to the heart of town. My phone sputtered a cacophony of alerts, indicating that my signal had returned with a vengeance. It was the same person who had contacted me before, the person I assumed lived in the house I had just left. However, they acted like we had never even met and asked me where I was about a dozen times. I decided to ignore the messages until I was back inside my house safely, with the doors locked and the blinds lowered. With the greatest trepidation, terrified trepidation, I might add, I hit the call button on the message, fully intending to play dumb to whoever answered on the other line. I had the entire story solidified in my head. I'd apologize for the miscommunication and tell her I sent a friend instead because I had a last-minute obligation. It was totally plausible, and I'd rather be seen as lazy than a threat. Unfortunately for me, no one answered. Most people these days aren't vocal talkers. Exhaustion had regrettably gotten the best of me, pretty much ruining my initial plans for the evening. There was no desire to space out in front of the TV, eating and smoking myself to a better state of mind. I didn't care what time it was. All I wanted to do was curl up and shut everything out for a while. So that's what I did. Sleep must have overtaken me because the next thing I knew, I was staring up at the bright blue sky. The roof above me had vanished, replaced with clouds and soaring birds. The scent of petrichor enveloped my senses, making my already nervous stomach churn. It wasn't long before I noticed that I had limited mobility in my arms and almost none in my legs. I didn't need to be claustrophobic to be extremely uncomfortable with what was happening. Dirt, tall, dank, and high, surrounded me on all sides. A shower of soil poured over me as I tried to claw the sides of the pit with my fingers. Flecks entered my eyes and mouth as I tried to scream, peppering my airway in the process. Then a bell began to ring. I shot up in bed, relieved to be awoken from my hellish nightmare. My phone was ringing, but not the normal call tone. It was higher pitched and tinny, a messenger call. Fear robbed every bit of moisture from my mouth and throat as I recognized who it was. Nevertheless, I wearily answered the phone, not expecting to hear a completely unfamiliar voice. As fate would have it, the conversation was not at all what I expected. Apparently, I had gone to the wrong house because of the signal drop. Business is business, but I still thought it was kind of rude when she told me she found the same amount for a better price and asked if I could match it. Normally, my anxiety would have gnawed at me until I gave an answer I wasn't comfortable with. But now, I was all too happy to politely tell her I'd send her money back immediately and apologized for wasting her time. My voice calmed as I told her I didn't blame her for her choice, even tossing in a half-hearted comment about how she'd be the first to know if my pricing changed. The only way she could have found it cheaper is if someone grew it themselves to sell, and I can't compete with the growers, nor do I want to. Once I was off the phone and more alert, I noticed a minute pain in my left eye. It increased to a throb by the time I got to the bathroom. My finger flicked the light on, and that's when I noticed a slight streak of brown on the panel underneath. I was surprised to see that my fingernails were absolutely filthy. It wasn't like me to not wash them once I got home, especially after such a dirty activity. The mirror revealed a speck of soil in the corner of the affected eye, and I realized I must have rubbed it in my sleep. That's just a sty waiting to happen, I thought, fretfully. Still, it was enough of an eerie coincidence that I was in no hurry to get back to sleep. In my carelessness, I'd gotten some dirt on my bedsheet. So I changed everything out before taking one of the hottest showers of my life. I wanted it all clean, everything that had ever occurred from that day. Out of sight, out of mind. I kept reminding myself that I wasn't the one that killed him, further justifying things by knowing that since I went to the wrong house, she had no way to contact or implicate me. An internal struggle consumed me for what seemed like all day. Do I go to the cops? Maybe if I told them what she'd threatened to say, it would ultimately cover my ass. Still, though, what were the chances of me just walking into someone's house at random after they'd just ended someone's life? Even if I said I was there on a weed run, I'm sure I wouldn't get in too much trouble. It's enough to say it would keep me from reporting the crime, anyway. Murder trumps weed dealing any time and day of the week by miles. And if she didn't confess, it would lead to a trial. I would more than certainly get subpoenaed, meaning days of reliving the event from every angle and on repeat. That's not exactly the best way to start a life over, and definitely not the mulligan I'd choose. Honestly, at that point, I kind of started to take it personally. I felt like the King Midas of shit. It just followed me everywhere that I went. Then again, I shouldn't feel too sorry for myself. I could have been the poor fella in the hole, I thought to myself solemnly. Torturous visions of my nightmare chased me throughout my entire day, no matter what I did to try to forget, and the continued burning in my left eye did not help. I swear, if I get a fucking sty. A weakness lingered like a bad cold inside of my muscles. Anyway, some bummers not even pot can fix, I guess. If anything, it almost made me paranoid and ultra-aware. That was the last thing I needed or wanted. Considering the day a defeat overall, I resigned myself to bed earlier than usual. I'd been up since before the sun rose, anyway. However, the trauma didn't stop. I tossed and turned, adjusting the frozen eye mask every minute or so to sit perfectly over my injured eye. It was the most nagging pain imaginable. Not that it really hurt all that much, but the intensity of the pain isn't what drives you crazy. It's the frequency and duration of it. Sometimes you can get used to it, but not when it's your fucking eye. Just when I thought I was comfortable enough to nod off, the mask would slip again. My fingers accidentally scratched the bottom of my forehead as I tore it off my face. I went to throw it to the side of me, and my arm crashed painfully into a wall of dirt. The action was so violent that for a second I was afraid I'd broken my wrist. I didn't remember falling asleep, but here I was again. The pit represented all the guilt, fear, and mortality that I possessed, and I was belly up on the bottom of it. The walls seemed so much higher now, and it was almost impossible to move my legs. They were tightly encased with soil, like a human plant growing the wrong way in one really fucked up garden. Panic wasn't even close to what I was feeling. The surroundings, what I could see of them, were a bit different this time. The blue sky was covered in gray, depressed clouds. Then the rain fell, fat and heavy. It hit the sides of the pit, causing it to bleed mud around me. The only thing I could think to do was try to claw my legs free a bit, which was easier said than done. All I really ended up doing was covering my front half as well, essentially helping further bury myself. A gag forced me awake, and I was almost relieved to be back in the world I belonged in, until another gag came, sending me flying to my bathroom sink. My lungs and throat felt shaky, like when I used to get bronchitis. A spurt of what looked like dark chocolate milk escaped from my mouth and spattered to the sink, and there was plenty more behind it also. I was mortified as it got thicker with each hacking cough, until I was merely spitting up tiny flecks of dirt. Brushing and rinsing my mouth repeatedly did little to remove the earthen taste, but at least I could breathe clearly again. What in the hell was going on? My actions were almost automatic as I dressed myself and entered my car. Unfortunately, the left eye was swollen at this point, but I decided I could see well enough to drive, especially in a town this slow. I'd probably see two or maybe three other cars on the road for the entire trip if traffic was especially crazy. I had to do it. I had to leave the house, get out of my head. I can pretend that it wasn't intentional, but who can say? All I know is that I ended up driving the same path out of town that I took the day of the incident. I wasn't sure if I'd be able to find the house again, but I had to try. What would I even say? "Hey there, lady. I've been having some issues sleeping since I helped you bury a body. Can you dig him up and rebury him so I'm morally off the hook?" I still hadn't found the house, several miles, radio stations, and too many cigarettes later. I traveled the road I remembered and several that I didn't, just to be safe, but to no avail. The more time I spent driving, the more I remembered what an awful idea it was in the first place. So, I headed home, feeling equal parts dejected and relieved. My urge to smoke had returned in small increments throughout the day, thank God. Unfortunately, the week had been so eventful that I soon found myself exhausted. The last thing I needed was a first-person view of being buried alive again. I'd already been slamming Cokes and coffees to extend my waking periods. The nightmare came for its mental attack. Of course it did, and worse than ever this time. As much as the immersion would be neat for the story's sake, it's repetitive. The way I woke up was far more interesting and ominous. Usual aches and pains caused by the immobility of sleep plagued me, as they did more mornings than not. However, the dullness in my damn eye seemed much worse. Soil-colored specks danced down my cheeks as I attempted to rub my eyes free of sleep sand. And as much as I didn't look forward to getting on my feet for the day, my bladder had other plans. So, without much ado, I trudged to the bathroom, not bothering to turn on the light as I went inside. The silhouette in my periphery gave me great pause as I attempted to leave the room. My mother always said I had an oddly shaped head, but it wasn't something I'd had the privilege of noticing until that very moment. My facial shadow was all wrong, distorted and the like. Trepidation weighed on my hands as heavy as dumbbells, yet I knew I had to turn on the light. As I approached the mirror, I was relieved that the bottom half of my face was without remark. The top half, however, was a different animal entirely. It looked like I was on the losing end of a heavyweight fight. The upper lid of my left eye was rendered so swollen that it was all but shut. It pulsated, sending waves of pain throughout my face with every beat. This wasn't a regular old sty, but an elephantitis-level sty. The comfort of heat and ice wasn't much help, but it was enough to slightly reduce the swelling. I'd washed my hands previously, and I was less than surprised at how much new earth was jammed in the beds of my fingers. I was about to attend to my eye when I doubled over in pain. A spasm, slight at first, twitched through my left eye, sending spikes of pain throughout my face. The unnaturalness of it was disturbing enough, but what it represented was far more unsettling. This was going on too long to be a fluke. This was a curse. My nightmares had slowly begun to manifest, taking a toll on my body and mind. A myriad of thoughts swirled in my brain, like blood down a sink drain, as I brought my fingers to my eye. Searing agony coursed through my face as the pressure made my skin pop. Then everything went black. For a moment, at least. Thick, wet heat consumed my body. My mind began to race as I recognized the familiar paralyzation of my legs, only now I could hardly move at all. I was suffocating, my breath being robbed from my lungs before I had a chance for full exhalation. A shudder racked through my nervous system, frustrated it couldn't manifest itself to the outside of my body, as insects skittered in and out of my hairline. Screams that I hardly recognized as my own brought me back to my current state, only now there was blood, and a lot of it. The mirror revealed a large gash on my forehead where I must have hit the counter upon passing out, and something else was there too. A shining trail of yellow sludge leaked from under my left eye and down my cheek. Horror filled my stomach as I noticed slight movement from just under the surface. I frantically wiped at it with toilet tissue, not as worried about the cut as what came out of my eye. And that's when I saw them. Two tiny maggots writhing in the puddle of infectious juice that I'd captured on the paper. I grabbed my keys and headed out the front door without bothering to clean myself up the rest of the way. I'm fully prepared to tell them everything if they don't put me to sleep. You've been listening to Member Berry and Murder by N.M. Brown. Author, CEO, and mother of our network, N.M. Brown is a proud Minnesota resident who uses inspiration to create dark tales everywhere she can. She has been featured in over 42 anthologies since 2019 and has her very own book release called The Origins of Delusion, which you can buy pretty much anywhere. And now, from author Ryan Major, I present Blanketed in the Stars. She will come to me, blanketed in the stars. I can't tell you how many times I heard those words over the last decade. My father, Raymond Chandler, suffered a massive stroke and developed motor aphasia. He couldn't say anything else afterward, just those nine words over and over. Well, I guess that isn't entirely true. He said something else at the end. But I'll get to that later. Mom and Dad worked for NASA when I was a kid. Both had completed multiple missions into space, and Mom had served on the International Space Station. She died there, as a matter of fact. Clara Chandler was the first person in the station's history to lose their life while stationed there. During a routine maintenance check on some of the external communication equipment, her tether came loose, and she drifted into the darkness of space, the result of poor safety checks, according to the final report. I was too young to understand exactly what happened, but old enough to understand that she was never coming home. Dad did the best he could, raising me as a single parent, but I don't think he ever took the time to take care of himself after she died. Even at a young age, I could tell he was aging too rapidly. His hair color faded, the skin on his face creased deeply, and he rarely slept. Still, he was a loving man. "Do you think Mom was scared?" I asked one night as my father tucked me into bed. "When she floated away, was she scared?" My father smiled that sad smile I came to know all too well. His hand stroked the top of my head and he placed a stuffed bear next to me on my pillow. "No," he said gently. Tears pooled in the corners of his eyes. "Your mother was a brave woman. Before you were born, we would sit outside and look at the stars long into the night. Nothing made her happier. Now she's with the stars. I think she was very happy that she was able to stay there." Dad suffered an ischemic stroke in 2012, just 4 days before his 58th birthday. What a gift, right? He remained in a coma for nearly a month. I don't want to dredge up all my memories of his recovery process, but I'll say this. It was rough. Most of his physicians believed he would stay in a catatonic state for the rest of his life. Regaining his ability to move independently seemed unlikely, even if he did wake. Speech? That would be gone too, according to the same doctors. Day after day, I would sit at his bedside and read to him, thriller and detective novels mostly. He was always so busy with work or taking care of me that he didn't have much time for leisure reading. Tons of professional journals and reference books, but rarely a good piece of fiction. That didn't stop him from picking up a hardback and adding it to his never-ending retirement reading pile. The silence of the first few visits was near maddening, so I began to pull a book from the towering stacks every few days and read it to him. Some of the nurses said they thought he would hear it. An anchor, some of them called it. I don't know if I believe it worked, but it helped fill the crippling silence of his sterile hospital room. After finishing up our fifth or sixth detective noir, I closed the book and slid it onto the table beside him. Looking at him, I saw his chest rising and falling shallowly. His color was ashen and his weight was dropping. A feeding tube ran into his nose, and his body was a maze of wires and adhesive pads. With tears in my eyes, I took his frail hand in mine and squeezed it. "Gotta go home, Dad," I whispered. "I love you." As I began to place his hand back on the white blanket, I felt his muscle tighten around my hand. He squeezed my fingers weakly. Both of his eyes opened lazily and gazed into mine. A croaking noise erupted from his throat, but dry coughs caused his body to shudder. He was trying to talk, but his mouth was too dry. In a panic, I fumbled to the bedside table for a bottle of thickened water. Some stroke victims have difficulty swallowing, so the nurses left a bottle in the event he woke up. Holding it to his mouth, he took small sips and smacked the roof of his mouth with his tongue. A wet cough exploded, and I used a Kleenex to wipe spittle away from the corners of his mouth. "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars," he said so quietly I barely heard him. I punched the call button beside his bed to alert the nurse. My pulse hammered, and my vision began to swim. Dad began looking around the hospital room with panic-filled eyes as I tried to calm him. "What?" I said, my heart thundering in my chest. "I couldn't understand you, Dad." He gripped my hand even more tightly and pulled me toward him. His sudden burst of strength startled me. I leaned in closely, placing my ear to his mouth. Hot breath and wheezing filled my ear. "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars," he said again. As he spoke the words, the bright fluorescent lights above the bed sizzled and burned away. After Dad was released from the hospital, I took over as his full-time caretaker. My work as a home healthcare nurse made for an easy, if not uncomfortable, transition. His recovery, for the most part, had been incredible. All his range of motion returned. He could walk on his own. His vision was as good as it had been before the stroke, and basic tasks like tying his shoes and getting dressed presented no issues. The only lasting effects were reduced hemiparesis, or weakness, on his right side, and his inability to communicate anything other than those 9 words. His aphasia never improved. "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars." His doctors said it was uncommon, but not unheard of. How a stroke damages the brain is different for each person. "The ability to form and speak full thoughts may return. It could be weeks or years," the doctor told us. "Or it may never improve." It never did. My father could only rattle off that single phrase. He said it with different voice inflections to express his mood. I didn't always understand what he wanted, but I knew if he was happy or sad. Anger was the easiest emotion to figure out. It could be incredibly frustrating, but I did my best to remain patient and understanding. For a brief time, we thought he may be able to write to communicate his thoughts, but that proved fruitless. Anytime you gave him a dry erase board or a pad of paper, he wrote those same 9 words over again. "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars." Slowly, things returned to normal in his life. As normal as you can expect for someone who loses their ability to speak coherently, anyway. Our daily routine hit a stride, and he was largely the man I remembered as a child. The new normal didn't last long. Dad started using chalk to draw enormous star maps on every inch of the walls. The massive designs eventually covered every available inch of empty space. As he ran out of room to expand his comprehensive work, he would remove framed photos and paintings from the wall and stack them in the center of the room. When he started, I was confused and concerned about the activity. When I say he was drawing star maps, I don't mean he would work in one area of the house until he completed a portion. He would stare at the wall for a half hour before placing a single dot. As soon as he had finished, he would walk to another room and repeat the process. Hundreds of times a day, maybe more. After a wall was sufficiently covered in tiny white dots, I waited until he went to bed one evening and decided to clean the walls. I filled a bucket full of warm water and used a soft sponge to remove the markings. It took me hours to wash them away and return the photos and paintings to their original positions. And when I was finished, some of my anxiety had diminished. The next morning, when Dad saw his work was gone, he was furious. "She will come to me!" he shouted as he stomped around the living room, gesturing towards the newly cleaned walls. "Blanketed in the stars!" "Dad," I pleaded, "they were just little chalk dots. Let's go in the kitchen and have some breakfast, huh?" He stormed back to his bedroom and slammed the door. I could hear him crying as I knocked, but he didn't answer. He didn't come out for the rest of the day, as I recall. He just sat in his room, whimpering and muttering those same 9 maddening words. As a peace offering, I drove to the store that afternoon while he napped and purchased him a box of chalk. It hadn't occurred to me that although his artwork on the walls didn't make sense to me, it could be very meaningful to him. I made a note to be less careless with his feelings. It did the trick. The next morning, when he came out of his room, I handed him the box of chalk. "I'm sorry," I said sincerely. "It's your house. If you want to draw on the walls, then that's okay. I shouldn't have taken it down." He gazed down at the box in his hand and smiled. "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars?" he said questioningly. "Sure, Dad," I responded. "Blanketed in the stars." Over the next few years, Dad filled the walls with enormous star maps. His pace had quickened, and soon the charts bent around the door frames and continued into the adjacent room. Some days he would pull huge books from his office and show me photographs of the constellations and formations as he repeated those echoing words. I knew, in his mind, he was explaining to me in great detail which celestial bodies his drawings represented, so I would nod along. He looked so happy, content, even in his weakened state. But all I heard were those words, "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars." 8 years after the stroke, and Dad's health was starting to take a turn for the worse again. He had a difficult time getting out of bed in the mornings. Standing for a long period was out of the question. His memory seemed to be slipping a bit, though it could be hard to tell with his limited speech. He forgot to shave, which had been a religious part of his daily routine. More often than I could count, I would catch him staring blankly into space. The buttons on his shirt would be undone at random intervals. His tidy demeanor shifted slowly into clutter and forgetfulness. But still, he added to his star charts and maps. That was also when the light bulbs started to burn out rapidly. Just one, at first, the hallway light outside of his bedroom. I would put a fresh bulb in, and within 2 or 3 days, the filament inside would be no more than 2 charred prongs. Heavy ash coated the inside of the bulbs. It wasn't long before the light bulbs began frequently burning out throughout the house. My weekly grocery trip always included a few packs of incandescent bulbs. I told myself the old-style bulbs may be the problem, and we switched to LEDs, but it only lasted a day or two longer. You never realize how expensive light bulbs can be until you start buying them 2 dozen at a time. After my frustration hit a melting point, I had multiple electricians come to the house and check the wiring multiple times in the following weeks. They would spend hours checking the sockets, but never found any issues. 6 electricians told me everything worked just like it should. Not a problem in sight. Bulbs continued to burn out. The pace quickened. It grew more common to let them sit dimmed in the sockets for a day or two before I would change them. With Dad's mobility dropping off, we stopped spending as much time outside the house. A few hours on the porch to combat seasonal depression, but otherwise we stayed in. We were used to taking daily walks or traveling to the planetarium. But now he would spend most of the day reading a book quietly in his armchair or staring off into space. His work on the star maps grew less consistent. I spent most of my day in front of the television. While I was a great student, I never developed the same love for reading that my parents had. Binging TV shows broke up the monotony of the quiet house when I wasn't busy taking care of my father. Most nights, I would fall asleep in the dim blue illumination of the flat screen. Some nights, I would wake up to see the glow of the TV hitting the tiny chalk dots on the wall. It almost made the little spots sparkle like the night sky, as though my father's artwork had come to life and embodied the very celestial landscape that danced above us. It was in the cascade of light from the television that I first started to see the sinister shapes. I knew it was my imagination, but thin lines seemed to grow between some of the stars. They came together to form the faintest outline of something that made my blood run cold. Sleek, hunched, and snarling creatures made of tiny chalk dots seemed to prowl on the illuminated walls. The sounds of cracking plaster and groaning wood filled my ears. A chill would build at the base of my spine as it crawled up to my neck, as though I were an unwitting animal in the sights of an apex predator. When I would turn the lamp on beside me, the half-dream figures would vanish. Nothing left but the white field of stars. I think my father felt it too. On those nights, I would hear him call out in panic. Cries of terror would fill the silence of the evenings. When I would enter the room, he would be pointing madly from wall to wall and screaming those same 9 words.
She will come to me, blanketed in the stars!
Whenever he grew panicked, I would have to sit beside his bed until he fell asleep again. The bedside lamp would always have a burnt-out bulb, so I would change it. Even if I left some of the other bulbs unchanged, I never let my father sit in the dark. He would hold my hand as he drifted off. It felt so much like when I was a child, crying over how much I missed my mother. Back then, Dad would hold my hand in the dim lamplight and whisper to me about how Mom was so happy among the stars. On the morning of my father's final day, I think I knew it was near the end. For most of the days leading up to it, he seemed to be filled with fear. He rarely slept unless I sat beside him, hand in hand. If I didn't sleep in the chair next to him, I almost always found him on the floor the next morning. He hadn't fallen. No, he would slip out of bed and return to his work on the walls. There he would be, clutching a dwindling piece of chalk, crumpled on the floor next to the wall. For the past few weeks, he had been scrawling away at an ornate rectangle. It was beautiful and haunting all at once, like the recording of a lost loved one's voice. It looked almost like a door, though it was nearly 9 feet tall. Delicate loops and swirls filled the space between the thick white border. Lighter shades of gray covered the inside, carefully smudged inch by inch by my father's shaking hand. He never worked on it during the day, only during the night, and only when I wasn't in the room. I purchased a baby monitor to place in his room for the nights when I was able to sleep in my bed. The first few times I saw him wobble across the floor to work on the door, I had run to the room and tried to put him back to bed, but he would become so agitated that I thought we would come to blows. No matter how many times I carried him back to bed, I would see him again on the screen working away at the door. The rest of his room was covered in more unsettling work. What had once been a field of white chalk stars now had faint lines connecting them. They came together to form vague outlines of the horrific creatures I always dreamt of. I never saw my father draw them, but they changed frequently. Occasionally, I was tempted to wipe them from the wall while he was out of the room, but I remembered how angry he became the last time I removed his work. As much as I hated them, I left the half-formed beasts to prowl amongst the chalk stars. That morning, when I entered my father's room, he was sitting in his armchair. His head was tipped back, and his robe drooped open at his sides. When I first saw him, I thought he had passed away in the night. My heart ached for a moment until I saw him stir.
"She will come to me," he said groggily, "blanketed in the stars."
"Good morning, Dad," I said. "Breakfast is ready." We ate together in the kitchen. Well, I ate. Dad picked at his breakfast and shoveled down a few mouthfuls of eggs. He hadn't been eating well for weeks and was beginning to look sickly thin. His doctor recommended IV nutrition if his eating didn't improve, and I was sure that would be the next step. Usually, we would sit on the porch after breakfast, but he got up from the table and shambled, on shaking legs, back to his bedroom and crawled beneath the covers. The sound of snoring soon poured out of his bedroom. For a few moments, I considered trying to stir him, to take him outside for some sunlight, but he seemed so frail. I decided to let him rest. Sometime in the afternoon, I must have drifted off. When I woke up, I could see the streetlights flowing in through the windows. Pulling the cord on the lamp beside me, I wasn't surprised to find the bulb was burnt out. Walking groggily to the wall, I flipped the light switch to discover it was also burnt out. I was heading toward the cupboard in the kitchen for some fresh bulbs when I heard my father scream. Rushing to his bedroom, I twisted the knob to find it locked. I began to bang on the door, calling my father's name, but he didn't answer. My ears were filled with his panicked screams and the sound of things falling to the floor.
"Dad!"
I shouted.
"Dad, unlock the door! You gotta let me in!"
More screaming and the sound of heavy footsteps. I threw my weight against the door, but the thick wood didn't budge. The hinges would rattle, but the door never gave way. Still, the sounds of terror inside persisted. Sweat began to run down my neck from the effort. My phone was still beside the recliner in the living room, so I ran back in to grab it and call 911. As I reached to pick it up, I looked at the screen of the baby monitor, and my heart nearly stopped. My father sat in his bed, blankets pulled up to his chin, shivering violently. His eyes darted side to side at the walls. Glowing orbs that had once been chalk stars danced along the walls as they bulged and rippled. Something behind the plaster and paint was pushing against them, trying to break through. Abandoning my phone, I ran to the garage and tumbled down the steps, landing hard on the concrete floor. My head was swimming, but I managed to push myself back onto my feet. Darting toward the tool bench, I found my father's old hatchet and ran back to his bedroom door. Blow after blow with the hatchet rained down from above my head. Flecks of paint and chunks of wood peppered my face as I carved away at the door. Inside, I could still hear my father screaming, but now it was mingled with a guttural rumbling that filled my heart with dread. After a few moments, I made a hole large enough to put my hand through. Shoving my hand inside, I swatted blindly for the door latch. The rumbling had swollen into deafening roars, completely covering my father's screams of horror. My hand found the lock and twisted it, allowing the door to swing in. I could see my father reaching toward me, eyes filled with terror. He was screaming something, but I couldn't hear him against the cracking of plaster and splintering of wooden beams. I didn't need to hear him to know what he was saying. "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars." Dozens of dull lights pulsed as they pushed themselves through the wall, tumbling to the floor. They rolled like bowling balls before coming to a stop. The strained sound from the walls fell silent as the orbs began to convulse. Slowly, they began to move toward each other before melting into an enormous sphere. My father and I stared in awe for a moment at the ball of light. I was about to call for Dad to come with me when the ball cracked like an egg, falling to pieces on the floor. And standing in its place was something unlike anything I'd ever seen. A creature made of small stars stretched its back and shook its head from side to side. Delicate lines flowed between each of the illuminated dots, forming the nightmarish beast. Heavy claws sank into the floor as it craned its neck toward me. Two red orbs in the sea of white met my gaze before the thing erupted in another guttural roar. I raised the hatchet above my head, but the thing swung a massive foot toward me and connected with my head. The hatchet dropped from my hand as I sailed through the air, crashing against the wall by the ornate door my father had drawn. The air ejected from my lungs, and I began desperately gasping for breath. The thing turned back toward my father and lowered its stance as it began to move toward him. He screamed and thrashed in the bed as the celestial demon crept closer. It seemed to be preparing to lunge for him when suddenly the room was filled with intense light. I looked to my side and saw brilliant beams pouring from the outline of the door. The light danced and erupted throughout the delicate latticework my father had drawn. All around us, the air was filled with a sensation of serenity. Even the beast turned to look. The ornate door pushed open, flooding the room with overwhelming warmth and light. I wanted to cover my eyes, but the sight was too beautiful, and I couldn't turn away. On the floor, at the foot of my father's bed, the celestial abomination began to roar and writhe in pain as the light from the door washed over it. I looked away from the opening to see the creature melting into a pool of illumination. The waves of warmth and light from the door had driven it back to wherever it had come from, leaving the room in silence. I turned back to the door. A woman walked out and into the bedroom. She was so tall, over 8 feet. Her body was slender and agile, her smile beautiful and serene. Draped over her shoulders and falling to the floor was a silver shawl. Lights danced and sparkled over every inch, shining like stars in the night sky. Blanketed in the stars. Leaning down toward me, she placed her hand on my chest, and my struggling lungs filled with air. Every ache and pain in my body faded. The sense of fear and dread washed away, and I felt suddenly calm. She smiled at me, caressed my face, and walked toward my father's bed. I looked toward him. He had thrown the blanket to the side and was smiling at the beautiful woman. He lifted a shaking hand toward her, and she lifted hers to meet it. "She has come for me," he said. Tears were streaming down his face as he gazed at the beautiful woman. "She is blanketed in the stars." The woman took my father's hand. "I've missed you, Raymond," she said in an ethereally beautiful voice. "I do believe it is time to go." "Clara," he cooed, voice steady and strong. "I knew you would come. You're as beautiful as you were in my dreams." He stood from the bed with a certainty that had been missing for so many years. Light washed over him as he changed. The frail man my father became was no more. He looked youthful, strong. He was the man I remembered from my childhood. My mother and father walked hand in hand toward the door, stopping for only a moment before me. He smiled at me as a single tear, sparkling with starlight, rolled down his cheek. My mother bent over and caressed my face again. I put my hand over hers for just a moment as she kissed the top of my head. "I love you," she whispered in my ear before standing back up. My lips moved, but the words couldn't come out. "I love you," I mouthed. She smiled and nodded. They passed through the door and it sealed shut behind them. I don't know where they went, but that's okay. Wherever they are together. Blanketed in the stars. You've just heard Blanketed in the Stars by Ryan Major. Ryan Major is a writer frequently featured on the Dr. No Sleep podcast and Full Body Chills podcast from Audiochuck. He lives in Kentucky with his wife and two sons. Blanketed in the Stars, along with many other of his short stories, can be found in his collection, I've Done This Before, through Velox Books, www.veloxbooks.com. Well, my friends, with that, we wrap up our episode this evening. I like to think that, somewhere, one of you is listening to this show after enjoying a bit of something herbal in a bedroom with glow-in-the-dark stars on the ceiling. If that's you, maybe sleep in another room tonight, for your sanity's sake. In any event, I'd like to thank you all for joining me tonight, even if one or two of you might fall prey to cosmic horrors later this evening. Extra thanks go to N.M. Brown and Ryan Major for their story contributions. I'll be back next week with another double feature, and I hope to see you there. Until that time, my friends, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted and narrated by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Original music provided by Eric Peabody and Nikki McSorley. Finalization by Eric Peabody and Craig Groshek. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at natalie@chillingtalesfordarknights.com to have your work considered for future production. Seeing as how we're all living in a technological nightmare of our own devising, I'll ask you to follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. Not only will you have appeased the dark gods of cyberspace, but you'll be kept in the loop as we prepare more terrifying content. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend becoming a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Otis Gyre's Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, Paul J. McSorley's Fear from the Heartland, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. As for me personally, I'm on most social media as Viking Guitar or Viking Guitar Productions. I'm always on the lookout for new stories to narrate and new music projects to mix or master. If that's of interest to you, feel free to reach out and we can talk turkey. Also, I will be back next week with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.